is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, tormenting its young people for months in protest. The young people have turned out in many of the cities throughout Iran to say no more for the regime. And yet, a report from CNN, U.S. senators call for a U.N. probe into secret Iranian torture centers, exposed by CNN. I welcome Benham Bentalibou, a senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, not only to explain torture centers in Iran and what is to be done, but also to connect all of this to the Islamic Republic of Iran's predation in its own neighborhood and yet peace gestures to Riyadh. A very good evening to you, Benham. Let's first address torture centers. Is this related to the protests by the young people? Good evening to you.
A very good evening to you, John. Always a pleasure to be with you. Most unfortunately, this is tied to the most recent round of protests that we've seen that you can say are part of a larger revolution by the street against the state. You know, the most recent iteration of protests began in September. Iranians have continued to bravely protest across the country, regardless of demographic or geographic or ethno-sectarian background, for 6+ months now. And what the Iranian government has done throughout these different iterations of street protests is refine a new and different weapon to deploy against the street. It's not just about the security forces on the street anymore. It's about how the state is using political and legal mechanisms to inflict harm on the Iranian population. In particular, how the justice system, or rather the injustice system of the Islamic Republic, is being weaponized. There are tons of prisons, secret courts, forced confessions, and as you mentioned, beatings, torture, and even rape of underage citizens of Iran, of Iranian youth in that country, at the hands of the security services from direct order on high through that country's injustice system. There's been reports of this as early as December last year, January of this year. Reporting has picked up steam, and I'm glad that the U.S. is looking into it. But again, actions here are going to matter much more than words, because this is how the regime is fighting the street with its state power.
At the same time, we have these headlines about Beijing, Xi Jinping in particular, finding a way to knit together, to bring together Riyadh, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. It is a puzzle. It was prior to the Moscow meeting, so it was on a peace tour. Xi Jinping was on a peace tour. What do you make of the practicality of this? Two sworn enemies from different parts of the universe claiming diplomacy.
John, I'm really glad you mentioned the China-Russia-Iran agreement. And as many of you viewers and listeners have noted on your show before, with respect to another agreement, the 2015 Iran nuclear deal known as the JCPOA, it's a real strategic mistake to project your own views onto something that we're watching unfold in the region in real time. Make no mistake, China swooped in last minute to capitalize on at least 5 or 6 rounds of private bilateral discussions since the Biden administration entered office between Riyadh and Tehran, often held through an Iraqi intermediary, formerly former Prime Minister Khatami of Iraq, and occasionally through Jordan and or Oman. There's still a little bit of a debate there as to who has been the second partner driving or seeking to reconcile these two capitals in the heart of the Muslim world. Beyond that, of course, the Chinese are the largest trade partner of Iran. The Chinese are the largest trade partner of Saudi Arabia. The Chinese actually buy the same thing from Iran and Saudi Arabia. They're hydrocarbon dependent on these countries, and they prefer a certain measure of stability between their economic partners. Many China analysts have said that the Chinese in the region are not going to be making the mistake that the U.S. made, which is to focus more on politics and security. They say that they have a preference for trade and mercantilism and economics. But as we all know in real life, with trade will come politics. So expect more meddling in this region, not less, as Beijing tries to punch above its weight politically and perhaps even in the security domain in the years to come. For Tehran, it's an entirely different ballgame. Tehran is looking to say that it bested Jerusalem en route to Riyadh. Tehran is looking to say that the Abraham Accords is something of yesteryear. And Tehran is looking to bring out a characteristic that exists within the GCC states, and that is hedging. And the greater distance from Saudi Arabia with its traditional partners and the greater bridging of the gap of Saudi Arabia with newer partners, the more it looks like a political, security, economic victory for Iran and for China. But make no mistake, this is no peace agreement. Let's not project our views, values, and wishes onto the hard realities of the Middle East.
Therefore, I can measure that the JCPOA that was rejected by the Trump administration and kept on by our allies in Europe, to reawaken the JCPOA, China watched this and came in and took advantage of it without the JCPOA or the strengthened JCPOA actually coming to fruition. And does the China presence make the reawakened JCPOA less likely or more likely?
I think the Chinese understand that they can't have long-term strategic financial deals that have their whole economy at play in a place like Iran unless there is no nuclear deal revived, which is why the Chinese have been increasingly advocating for that and have featured being an advocate of the JCPOA in bilateral discussions, whether with the Iranian president or whether with the Iranian foreign minister or whether in bilaterals that involve the Chinese ambassador to Tehran. But also here, it's critical to make no mistake, the JCPOA was one of many issues between America and Saudi Arabia that was left unresolved, that is driving Saudi Arabia towards more and more and more hedging. A previous example, of course, is the way the Saudis thought the Bush mishandled the freedom agenda. Another example beyond the JCPOA is the way the Trump administration did not respond to Iranian attacks against American drones, as well as Iranian attacks against civilian targets in Iraq and military targets in Iraq, as well as Iranian attacks on Saudi Arabia itself. So in the mind's eye of Saudi Arabia, this hedging is driven by a recent string, a bipartisan string of policy failures to contain Iran. And this is Saudi Arabia not going to Iran's adversary to constrain Iran. This is Saudi Arabia going to Iran's patron, China, to try to find a way to constrain Iran.
So I'm going to focus on Riyadh. There's news within these hours, Reuters, Saudi Arabia to reestablish ties with Syria. Okay, I understand, although the history of the two countries extends back to the assassination of a former prime minister in 2005, as I understand, and they've been at odds ever since, catastrophically at odds. However, this appears again as something that I've read about, that the Saudi Arabian, the kingdom, especially MBS, is preparing for the eventuality that the U.S. is leaving. Is that how to interpret this?
That is one of many ways to interpret this. And while the U.S. has not fully left the region yet, the U.S. has also not picked up the pieces to do what is necessary, in my view, to repair an ultra-critical relationship for U.S. national security. Beyond that, of course, Saudi Arabia is tightening economic ties with China. It's worth noting that the trade balance of maybe 20 years ago of America and GCC, and America and Saudi Arabia in particular, is now mirroring the trade balance of today with Saudi Arabia and the GCC towards China. And if the predicate for the U.S.-Saudi relationship was energy for security, and America is now a net energy exporter or close to it, minus what the Biden administration is doing on the green front there, the fundamentals of the U.S.-Saudi relationship are now in jeopardy. Therefore, the kind of measures that we're seeing that are trying to divorce Saudi Arabia rather than re-embrace Saudi Arabia will ultimately drive Saudi Arabia not just into Tehran's hands, but Saudi Arabia into Beijing's hands, and will really make it look like the U.S. did not leave the region, but rather that the U.S. was kicked out of the region.
I've seen speculation that China is entreating Saudi Arabia to join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Is that just rumor mill, or have you heard the same thing, Benham?
I have heard it, but only in the rumor world. I have not seen it qualified in print. I have not had a good source tell me this. I think, again, having the rumor out there, having the information out there, is designed to get Americans to panic and push away from Saudi Arabia when really they should be tightening the embrace. This agreement may not end up even being actualized between Iran, Saudi, and China. There's supposed to be a two-month cooling-off period. Iran's President Raisi was just invited to Saudi Arabia. We'll see if he goes. Iran is unlikely to stop supporting the Houthis. Iran is unlikely to stop being the Islamic Republic that we all know it is, and which is a revolutionary regime trying to overturn stasis powers like Saudi Arabia. So this deal may not come to fruition even, but they are trying to poison the well between America and its traditional partner in the region, Saudi Arabia.
There was also talk last week that Saudi Arabia is interested in joining the Abraham Accords if, and then there are some conditions. Is that something substantive, or is that just rumor mill as well?
That is something that ultimately many, not just in Washington and some even in Jerusalem, have wanted. Many in the region would have wanted this as well. What a message of unity that would send towards America, towards Israel, and against the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran right now, with its diplomacy in the region, is trying to cement the previously gained military victories that its proxies and partners, known as the Axis of Resistance, have had in the region. This is Iran's traditional modus operandi, which is come at you with both a handshake and a knife. It's designed to make the likes of Saudi Arabia not become an Islamic Republic overnight, but designed to make the likes of Saudi Arabia increasingly accommodate rising Islamist Iran in the region, and in so doing, go away from its traditional partner, America.
Bannon Bentaleblou is a senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He's the author, most recently, of a detailed document about the arsenal in the Islamic Republic of Iran that threatens the neighborhood. The subhead is the assessing the IBM ballistic, the Iran's ballistic missile program, arsenal. When we come back, we're going to speak to not only the arsenal itself, but also the suspect nuclear weapons program. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.